Welcome to Manager Tools. The Manager Tools Performance Review System, Part 4. Here we go. This cast answers these questions. What's the best way to set up a performance review system? How often should I rate my directs? Who should rate the performance of directs and how? If you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening.
The two fundamental ways you can improve the quality of your results and your retention is to manage better and to hire better. If you want to hire better, one way to do that is to use the Manager Tools interview creation tool available to all licensees. Come to the website, manager-tools.com/interview creation tool.
Let's go back to the whole 90 days thing, right? I'd say because any performance system is ideally designed to capture as much performance data as is reasonable possible, then clearly the system has to capture the periods of time and the ratings rating status during that time, right? For example, it is very possible that there's 90 days time, which I am not getting reviewed for, and the system ought to know that.
Yeah, what we say is reviewed and non-reviewed periods. You're obligated to capture all of the time from the start of the review period till the time the review is written, and to identify what period was rated and what period or what period was reviewed and what period was not reviewed.
We got to be clear here, because I think in most organizations, what happens is the distinction is not made.
Oh, no, it's not.
And even worse, the manager who's rating the review for, say, that entire year has no experience of the 90 days. For example, the manager was out of the office or whatever. There's the period at which there is a reasonable review can't be written, and they fudge it and they fake it, and they actually review a period of time that they shouldn't be.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, if you have simply a 12-month review system and it's calendar year based, you imply by the nature of two reviews being held in somebody's hand when they're done that those reviews had essentially equal ability to be high quality and accurate. And it simply falls. If you don't capture 6 months where somebody was seconded to someone else, or where they had three different bosses and this boss is only reviewing them for 25 days or 30 days, but it's the end of the year, and so you got to write a review. If you don't capture all that stuff, you're essentially saying these two people are equal in the eyes of the system. A boss is not going to go to the mat and say, this person is outstanding, if they've only managed somebody for 35 or 45 or 60 or 70 or even 3 days or even 90 days. They're not going to do it. So you have to capture how much time the review covers in terms of the manager actually seeing the performance of the subordinate. It's because the system is designed to capture as much performance data as is reasonable, any system has to also capture the periods of time and the ratee's status during that time and the non-review time. This kind of data gathering about, you know, when my boss was my boss has been lost because the assumption of annual reviews is that whomever the rater is at the end of the year has an obligation to gather data from all relevant parties, could be previous raters, but often other raters and anyone else, over the course of the year. That assumption made a lot more sense in the more stable personnel systems that existed up until 25 years ago. But it's been a quarter of a century, which is long enough to say, wow, we did something 30, 50 years ago that made sense in the kind of environment we're in. And we've been making changes to it all along based on some assumptions. Now, the people who are administering the system that organizations have today were not there when the system originally was created and are unaware of the assumptions that went into that system, or the relative, what would be the word, the frothiness of the internal talent management, the talent movement, the talent market, internal talent market in the organization. They didn't know that on a scale of 0 to 100, the internal talent market was dynamic to the tune of, let's say on a score 0 to 100 of 10, and now it's at 80. The fundamental assumptions that existed and informed the creation of the performance review systems have been lost. We've been bolting on, tacking on, changing the form, changing the form, changing the form for years and years and years. And now we have an environment where the original underlying assumptions are not just not right, they're absolutely counterproductive to the effectiveness of the system. The whole idea, again, is to give senior people good information in order to make personnel decisions. So those assumptions aren't valid anymore, and it just doesn't make sense. We've got to review people more frequently in an internal talent market that's more dynamic. So at the top of the form, have an administrative section, and it would be at the very top, above the critical message of the review, which shows the period being reviewed, the time since the last review, and also then show time since the last review that falls into the not reviewed category due to changes in roles or raters that don't meet the 90-day minimums. So as an example, I work for Mike on January 1st. He writes a review. Now let's not get January 1st, June 1st. He writes a review of me because I've been working for him for 12 months. At the end of July, so 60 days, Mike changes role. I would normally get a change of rater review, but because it's only been 60 days, I don't. The new person comes in, and I now have 10 months left on my clock since an annual review, or to a new annual review. When he writes the review on me, there will be 2 months that will show as non-rated time. And of course, you can string that out and get more complicated. And yes, it's entirely possible, folks, that I could go 6 months, 9 months, a year without reviewed time, but the system would know that. And hopefully the HR business partner would say, you know, we got to get Horstman a boss that stays in the role for a while because we don't know how he's doing. He's had 3 different bosses during this, or 5 different bosses during this year, and really has a ton of unrated time because he never had a boss for 90 days in order to trigger a review. So make sure you have an administrative section which shows the various periods when a person was rated and not rated.
Okay, so one thing about our system, and this will drive some HR people crazy, I'm sure. If the organization does performance reviews annually, say at the end of the calendar year, then there's no need to track when any specific reviews do. They're all due at the same time. But now, with our system, they're due all over the place, right? So this must be just a management nightmare. So we need some rules or some guidance really in our system about how to manage that.
Yeah. And this is a case where most organizations have a tracking system. But in this case, you're definitely going to have one. And you're going to have to be, you know, when a role changes, the organization will have to learn that, oh, one of the things that happens at the time of somebody changing jobs is reviews have to be written. And just in case that perhaps got lost, the system will say, hey, there's a review that's due. And reviews are due 30 days after a rating period is complete. So if it's been a year and I started working for Mike on 1 June, next May 30th, I do a review and there are 30 days. So I have until 30 June.
Not just to have it written, right? There's like completing the review means several things, right? It means that the person has to write the review, the reviewer has to review it and approve it, and the person who is receiving the review has to get it and sign it.
Yeah, and to be clear, there are different ways you can skin this cat. Some organizations say the manager has 15 days and the reviewer has 10 days and so on. We're simply saying you've got 30 days to have the review in the system, however you want to capture the system. Maybe it means scanned and shown as complete. You could easily say, well, what are the steps in the system? And you could make a little project that says, okay, the manager has 15 days and so on. The danger of ours is saying you have 30 days is the reviewer might say, okay, manager, you have 10 days. And then the reviewer gets 20 days to review it. I think that's dumb. I also think if you're a manager, you wouldn't want to give it to your reviewer on the 29th day. I don't think any senior manager or director would have a problem with being a few days late with a review, of course. But we're focused on the timeliness of the data in the system. We generally would say that senior people would only get a third of that time. The manager gets 2/3 and the reviewer gets 1/3. That's a standard 1/3 planning rule. Every level of the organization gets a third of the time in the system. We've got a podcast about that from 10, 12 years ago. But different organizations might choose to do it differently. All we're concerned about is making sure the review is current and accurate. You don't want to give somebody 6 months because it will never happen. And you don't want to say you're red after 5 days. 30 days is actually pretty generous for a one-page form. And you're going to know, in most cases, when a review is happening, before it happens. And even if you don't, if you suddenly change jobs and then have to write 5 or 6 reviews, you're only writing one page and you can do it by hand. And because you're doing it throughout the year, you stay fairly current. It's not a horseman's Christmas rule kind of thing.
Yeah, it doesn't take a lot of time. And matter of fact, the information degrades, the quality of it degrades with time. So best to get it done.
You could write it in 24 hours. I rarely see schedules, except at the very, very senior levels, who couldn't, if one of their people got promoted or moved or changed or for whatever reason had a change of role, that you could not schedule 30 minutes in your day to write the review. Now, you might say, wait, Mark, you know, annual reviews, they take much longer. I've got to prepare. I've got to write it and so on. Yes, but if you've only had somebody for 60 or 90 days, if you've had them for more than 90 days and less than a year, and you're constantly writing reviews on people, it shouldn't take you that long. Even if it did, you've got 30 days, which is way more than enough time for one review. Worst case, I think it takes a week to do the preparation and the writing. And of course, the writing that we recommended you do and the preparation we recommended you do in our previous guidance was based on an annual review system where you had a year and had to go through a year of emails and a year of performance data. So 30 days, I think, is pretty generous.
Yeah. And if you're doing one-on-ones, folks, we're going to assume you're doing one-on-ones. If you're doing one-on-ones, this becomes a trivial, easy exercise. There are times when it can be difficult, right? For example, I'm thinking during a major reorganization where we just have a huge number of managers and people changing roles and positions and all that. That's a little different, right? That's a little harder.
Yeah. Reorgs make this hard. If 2 to 3 to 4 managers report to the same reviewer and they all change roles and that triggers a change of rate or review for 30 total direct reports, all 30 of those reviews are due and having been signed by the reviewer in 30 days. Yeah, that's a lot. And maybe that will cause reorganizations to happen less often. Who knows? But look, it's been our experience that it isn't the signature that's the problem for reviewers, but the reviewer keeping track of whom they reviewed and normalizing reviews more broadly across the organization than direct managers can do because of scope. And so there's going to be some horse trading discussion between managers and their bosses. This system is not designed to eliminate discussions, communication, reaching agreement about the level of talent in an organization. That you cannot do that because we're, unfortunately, in this case, human and not machine.
Right. I guess the other option is you can just do the reviews the way they're normally due today. And if you do a reorganization in September and everybody shifts roles, you just lose all that performance data for 9 months, right? That's the alternative.
Well, here's what happens. We write a review at the end of the year, but we've lost the performance data.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, if you have a killer year in the first 9 months and then your boss changes and your new boss and you don't get along, don't be surprised if you don't benefit by the performance that you put in the first 9 months. The organization ought to have an opinion about that, and it ought not to like it very much.
Yeah, I would think. Okay, more administrative stuff. Direct signs for the receipt of the review. That is not unusual, but there are many organizations today where that does not take place. So why do we suggest, and this is an old, it used to be that the direct always signed it, right? In my history, oh, yeah. But that's changed a little bit. And we're being old curmudgeons here and suggesting that directs ought to actually sign it. Why?
It is a dumb idea for performance reviews to serve as a performance feedback system. Okay? It really is. I've said it too many times. I'm not going to say it again. But that horse has left the barn, and there's an assumption that performance reviews are a feedback system. You'll notice that up until now, guys, all we've been talking about is what the organization needs for talent management. But people assume that their reviews are about them and for them when they're not. But there's an assumption today the direct gets to see their review. To make sure that they have, we recommend that your direct, the person being reviews, signs the document. And this is always funny. People say, oh, I'm not going to sign that. Yeah. Well, okay, I'll make a note on the file that you were shown the review and you refused to sign. You're not signing to agree with it. You're signing to say, yes, I've seen this. Now, look, those things are going to be much harder if the boss doesn't have a trusting relationship. Gee, I don't know. Is there a podcast out there you could learn about how to build trusting relationships with your direct? But I think the reason for signing it is because we don't want the system to know something about the performance of an individual that the individual doesn't know. What we want to do is make the system, what this guidance is designed to do, is make the system more about its fundamental premise, which is giving the organization talent management input. However, part of talent management is people knowing where they stand and being aware if they are struggling or not doing as well as they think. We don't want there to be too big a gap, ideally no gap, but that's impossible, between what the individual thinks and knows about their performance and what the organization thinks and knows. So in that sense, if somebody got a great or a bad review, we want them to know it so that the person, the manager, who is responsible to the organization for that person's talent improvement or performance has a chance to work with them on it. So signing it is a minimum. But remember, guys, remember what I said before, we don't have self-review in this Manager Tools performance review system because we recommend that to individual managers, not to organizations. So we would certainly recommend, as a manager, you say to your people, even if it's, you know, suddenly a person's leaving, hey, if you want me to write a review on you, you've got to get me a one-page support document within 24 hours so that I can write a review. You're going to a better job, that's great, but you don't want me to write a review without you providing some input. So that's a manager doing an individual thing as opposed to an organization doing it. And if there were a problem between the direct and the manager in terms of the review or something like that, then the direct always has the opportunity to go to HR in larger organizations.
Okay. Lastly, our last point, and I think clearly folks probably have figured out by now that this is a little bit more complicated than performance reviews today. And with that complication comes with a great deal more effectiveness, right? We're writing more reviews. We're getting better at reviews. The quality reviews are better. But this requires managers to know what they're doing. And that means new managers, when they get promoted or hired, they need to be trained on this.
Well, you don't really need us to tell you that. You just need to be somebody who's gotten a poorly done review. And I say bad review all the time, but it could mean you did a poor job and your review reflected it, or your manager did a poor job reviewing you. Either one would be a bad outcome. So all of this aside, and I'm sure HR folks are like, wow, that's a lot of changes and so on. So yeah, you're right. We recognize the strengths and weaknesses of our recommendations. Don't bother following this guidance unless you're going to train all the managers on their roles within the system. Now, it shouldn't be hard. If you need us to help, we'll help. Performance review systems are generally poorly trained. When we ask groups of managers, have you ever heard of SEER or SUMX? I already mentioned them. I don't think we've ever had a single manager indicate any knowledge of these techniques, other than those people who've listened to podcasts. Now, maybe 10% of HR people have, but I'm sorry, that's shameful. And I'm not talking just about HR, I'm talking about managers as well. Managers aren't taught a systematic way to review emails. Managers aren't taught to review one-on-one notes. Managers aren't taught how early they need to start doing this stuff. If you're not going to train managers to do this the right way, don't bother doing this. A new system without training is the same as the old system with a new form that nobody's going to like anyway. You know what? I should say this, since this is our first organizational systemic guidance. If you're an organization that is thinking about doing something like this and you want help, we'll help. We're eager to help. Now, to be clear, that kind of help wouldn't be free. But if you believe in the kind of guidance we're giving, I'd be happy to help.
Excellent.
So let me summarize if I can. Folks, if you want more effective reviews, we've got to simplify the burden on managers. Don't make everyone do them at the same time every year. Spread them across the entire year. Okay? Make them handwritten. Get rid of the quantitative criteria that nobody norms and compares anyway. Make them one page. Managers won't hate them. They'll do them better. More executives will be inclined to read them. And they'll use them for their intended purpose, which is succession planning, or mentoring, or development. That'd be something new. And that's it.
Awesome, my friend. Enjoy that immensely.
Good.
All right, everyone. We'll see you next week.
So long.